You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. This week's message is week 3 of our teaching series titled, Best Supporting Actor. For more information and to visit us online, visit us at midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
In 1985, actress Sally Field, she won an Academy Award for her role in the film Places in the Heart. Now, I've never seen that movie before in my life, but I have become familiar with the famous acceptance speech that she gave on stage that night. After somewhat of a dry spell in her career, she kind of felt like she was on the outside of the industry looking in. She stood on stage that night and she accepted the award in front of, you know, all her peers and all her colleagues, in front of all of America. And she delivered what has now become like an iconic few lines as she declared on stage that night, "You like me. You really like me." Anyone remember this moment here? Everyone, like, you know, older than me is like, yeah, I remember that. Everyone younger than me is like, what are you talking about? She's so moved. She accepted the award. She's so moved at the recognition of all her hard work and at the applause of Hollywood. And it's crazy. I mean, I've never seen the movie, but I know the moment, right? She's still remembered for this moment to this day. In my opinion, it's such a, you know, like an endearing moment that's lived on now for 40 years because it, to me, it showed really like how human she was, right? Despite her fame and popularity and the wealth that she was, you know, developing, it was like this moment of authenticity where it was, you know, she was just showing that she was like no different than the average person. She had the same hopes and dreams that you and I do. Right, the same hopes and dreams to be seen and to be noticed and to be applauded for you know who we are and simply put this dream and this hope simply to be liked. I mean, don't you want to be liked? I think, you know, behind even like the hardest of exteriors, deep down is someone who still wants to be liked. I do. I mean, I do not like when people do not like me. I'm like, come on, man, I'm a good dude. You know, it's like, ah. And I wonder how many of you feel the same way. And what's harder about this and what's even more difficult, what's worse at times, is when people don't like us because we love Jesus. It kind of raises the question in my mind, like, what do we do with moments like that, right? When people don't like us because we love Jesus. What do we make of the times when our faith comes under fire, right? What do we do when following Jesus isn't very popular? And how should we understand the moments that we experience in life, what, you know, when we experience not applause for our faith in Jesus, but rather opposition? How do we understand these moments? See, in my estimation, it's like the opposition to our faith that oftentimes like kind of shakes the ground beneath us a little bit, right? It's these moments of opposition to our faith or to the good news of Jesus that makes us kind of like, you know, start to question our faith. We're going like, well, you know, the world is saying like, hey, that doesn't work. That doesn't fly. And then it kind of makes us wonder like, well, wait a second. Maybe is our faith, maybe that part of it is, you know, is a little questionable, right? It's opposition to our faith and following Jesus that makes us like uneasy, makes us start to wonder if like, uh-oh, is there a part of what we believe that maybe needs to be reconsidered or kind of repackaged or massaged somehow into something different, right? It can be a little disorienting, and that almost can be like a little bit of a slippery slope. And so what I want to try to do and suggest to you today about these moments of opposition, what I want to suggest is that oftentimes opposition is opportunity. That's what I want to try to suggest to you today, that opposition is sometimes just opportunity to leave a Jesus-like wake or to leave a Jesus-like mark in the world. At the very least, here's what I would say. Opposition is to be an expected part of the Christian life or of the Christian experience. And there's a relatively unknown character in the New Testament who learned this lesson the hard way. And we can learn from him a very valuable lesson about what it means to follow Jesus. And it's his story that I want to explore with you today in the last week in this series that we call Best Supporting Actor. It's been this series where we've just been looking at a handful of unsung heroes, like the unknown influencers of the New Testament, people who only play like a minor part in the story of Jesus, and yet they had like a major impact on all of the efforts to spread the good news of Jesus. And so if you have ever felt too ordinary to be used by God in big ways, my hope throughout this series is that you would learn from these characters and that you'd learn from the one we look at today, that you would learn of the extraordinary ways that you can have an impact in the course of your everyday life. The character that I want to introduce to you today, he doesn't have a hard to pronounce name as we sometimes expect from people in the Bible. His name is Jason, right? You got like Epaphroditus, Aristarchus, like Priscilla and Aquila. And then you got like Jason. I'm going like, yeah, my man, I like this, right? Jason is the guy we're going to look at today. His name shows up four times in five verses in one short story in the book of Acts. The book of Acts is just the book in the Bible that records all of the details about how the message of Jesus spread and about how the early, first century church really began to form. And we're going to turn our attention to Acts chapter 17. Here's what's happening in this moment. The one that we refer to as the Apostle Paul, and Pastor Jonathan actually kind of explored a little bit of his conversion story briefly last week. The one that we refer to as the Apostle Paul, he's teaching about Jesus in the city known as Thessalonica. And people who were listening are being like persuaded in droves to follow Jesus and to join in on Paul's mission to go tell others about Jesus. And so there's a lot of, excitement here. And this is ultimately where we're going to drop into the story. Verse 5. Here's what it says. But, right, Paul's preaching powerfully. People are excited about this. But some of the Jews were jealous. And so they gathered some troublemakers from the marketplace. One translation says some bad actors from the marketplace. What'd they do? They gathered them up to form a mob and start a riot. No, this is not, a report of bad actors being gathered up to cause trouble in our streets today. This is describing what is happening in the streets of Thessalonica 2,000 years ago because of Paul's teaching, right? Those who didn't like the attention that Jesus was getting and the influence that he was getting, they whipped up some bad actors and they started a riot. Here's what they did. They attacked the home of Jason, searching for Paul and a companion of his in the ministry, Silas, so they could drag them out of the crowd. It doesn't really give us a whole lot of information here about this guy Jason, but apparently this mob, this riot, they suspected that Jason had taken Paul and Silas in for their own safety, right? They assumed that he did because the mob went looking for Paul and Silas there. Here's verse 6. Not finding them there, Paul or Silas, they dragged out Jason and some of the other believers instead and took them before the city council. Here's what they said to the council. Paul and Silas have caused trouble all over the world, they shouted. And now they are here disturbing our city too. And Jason welcomed them into his home. They're all guilty of treason against Caesar, for they profess allegiance to another king named Jesus. Here's verse 8. The people of the city, as well as the city council, were thrown into turmoil because of these reports. So the officials forced Jason and the other believers to post bond. And then they released them. Now, as I mentioned here, we don't know a lot about Jason. It doesn't really say like who specifically he was. You know, it doesn't say what he did for a living. It doesn't really say what formal role, if any, really, he played in the start of the early churches, or, you know, doesn't really say what exactly his prior friendship was like with Paul or Silas or anything. All we really know from this is that he was a follower of Jesus in Thessalonica who offered safety to Paul and to Silas in their time of need. And here was his reward. His house was surrounded by an angry mob. He's dragged out of his house into the middle of an active riot, and then he's arrested and he's forced to pay, you know, a hefty fine out of his own pocket to secure his release from prison. Why? All for aiding and abetting some people talking about Jesus. Gang, I know this isn't gonna, you know, be necessarily like the best like advertising for Christianity, but there's something important that we got to understand from all of this. Sadly, then and still today, okay, at times there are social and sometimes even legal and financial consequences for standing with and for following Jesus. See, what I think Jason's story demonstrates for us is that following Jesus is costly. There's no other way around it. Following Jesus is costly, right? That there might be legal risks. Thankfully, you know, like not as great here as in other parts of the world, but sadly, it is still a possibility. There could be like financial cost to it, and there almost certainly will be, if there has not been already, there will be social scrutiny for following Jesus. Legal risk. Financial cost, social scrutiny. Who's with me? Right? Ushers, lock the doors. Don't let anybody out now. You know, no, I'm just kidding, right? But I'm joking because, like, this is, I mean, it's not like that encouraging a prospect here. And this is ultimately, like, this is what's hard. And this is what is even confusing about following Jesus. When following Jesus isn't popular. So when any kind of like opposition like this arises, I think the temptation to think, the temptation is for us to think like, oh no, we did something wrong. Like we didn't get this right. Oftentimes I think we're tempted to believe, or we want to believe that if we're doing Christianity like, you know, correctly, if we're following Jesus correctly, right, then I think we want to believe like it will just lead to, you know, being all of us being like universally well received, right? I think deep down inside of us, we want to think that, hey, if we love people in the name of Jesus, then they'll like us in return. But what I would suggest, and again, I'm not winning any like, you know, marketing awards for this here today. Like, but what I would suggest to you today is that this is not always the case, that when we love people in the name of Jesus, then we follow after Jesus, that people will like us in return. It's not always the case. And we just got to understand this, right? Now, certainly it is possible, don't get me wrong, it's possible for Christians to misrepresent Jesus. But more often than not, what I would suggest to you is that opposition to the claims of Jesus, right, to the teachings of Jesus, more often than not, I would suggest that it's not necessarily evidence that we got some part of Jesus's teaching wrong, but that more often than not, it's just evidence that we have found ourselves right in the middle of an opportunity to stand boldly with and to stand boldly for Jesus in a way that could speak louder, quite honestly, than any sermon ever could. See, what's amazing about Jason and what we kind of applaud of him is that it wasn't some kind of like impressive speech he gave or like sermon that he preached. It wasn't his command of the scriptures or of the religious law, right? It wasn't some, you know, theological argument that he won that we went like, yeah, you know, get him, Jason, right? It wasn't some like miracle that he performed. It was his willingness to stand in the fire and to take the heat when the temperature turned up. Right? He didn't bail out. He didn't go like, whoa, I had no idea, you know, that, you know, this was going to be so unpopular, right? He didn't go like, whoa, I didn't have any clue when I signed up for this, that this is what people were going to, you know, think of me, right? He didn't go like, wow, I better rethink this thing. Now, admittedly, we don't know exactly, you know, what he, you know, did in the moments or the weeks or the months to follow, but look at the book of Romans. This is the Apostle Paul writing to another letter to Christians in the city of Rome. And here's what he says. He says, Timothy, my fellow worker, sends you his greetings, as do Lucius, Jason, and Sosipater, my fellow Jews. Okay? So they were fellow Jews, yes, but they specifically were Jews who had put their faith in the resurrected Jesus. And so this mention here of Jason in Romans chapter 16, it points in many ways to his continued faithfulness, you know, in ministry, or his continued faithfulness in following Jesus. And so, gang, here's ultimately the hard truth that I want to share. And it is hard, and that's why I'm, you know, keep saying, like, I get it. This is not necessarily, like, great, like, advertising material. But I do think it's something that we have to understand about following Jesus. Here's what I want us to understand, that faithfulness is not measured in popularity. Faithfulness, it is not measured in popularity. And I understand that's like a hard truth to grapple with. If I'm really honest with you, I had this message prepared for 2 weeks ago when the snow came and we canceled services. And we got together with our team and we thought, well, you know, we can just get a small crew and, you know, we could just stream the service online and maybe we should have, I don't know. But in my mind, I thought, like, I don't know. This is an interesting message to want to share, going, hey, gang, this is not going to, following Jesus isn't popular. There's a part of us there. I want to be in the same room, right? I don't want to have people like, you know, like watching on a tiny screen here and their kids are playing over there as I deliver this, you know, news about, you know, what following Jesus is all about. I want to be in the same room. I want people to see me and hopefully get a sense of my heart as I talk about the reality that faithfulness and following Jesus, it is not measured in popularity, right? Our impact on the spreading of the love or the good news of Jesus being used by God in really significant ways, that's not measured by popularity. Or it's not measured by how the world, you know, applauds us and celebrates us for what we believe. It is measured, rather, all of this, it's measured in perseverance and in grit and in boldness and in courage to take the heat when the temperature rises. And so if I just pivoted for a second here, here's what I would say to some of you here today, because I recognize we're all at different places in a, you know, relationship with Jesus. But here's what I would say. If you're like on the fence about this Jesus thing, you're like, you're kind of interested, you kind of been, you know, open to it, but if you haven't like really yet counted the cost, there's a part of me that I'd be going like, maybe just give it a second, maybe give it some more thought, maybe wait to go all in until you're like really in, until you're really sold on who this Jesus is and who he said he was, that you really believe that he died for your sins and mine and that he rose from the grave and that he defeated death to offer new life to anyone and everyone who put their faith in him. Because the reality is, once you decide to take a stand for Jesus, right? Jonathan said a couple weeks we're celebrating baptism, people making a public declaration of their new association, their new faith in Jesus, right? If you're taking steps like that or any other kind of step following after Jesus, once you take a stand, the hard truth is that popularity, it's not a guarantee. In fact, here's what Jesus said about being a follower of his. It's a little harsh, but again, I just think it's something that we need to understand so that we don't make the wrong conclusion about how people respond to the ways of Jesus. Here's his own, he's Jesus talking here, Matthew chapter 10. Here's what he says. He says, you'll be hated. You'll be hated by everyone because of me. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. Now, hate is a strong word, and I'll be honest, I personally don't have like angry mobs surrounding my house. You know, that's not like a thing. Thanks be to God, right? So yeah, this is like strong statement and great. You know, I'm grateful that you and I, we don't have mobs surrounding our houses. But in my estimation, and maybe you see the same thing, if you notice, no angry mobs in my front yard, but Christianity isn't, it's not necessarily like all that universally popular. It's not always all that like celebrated, you know, in larger society or, you know, in all our schools or institutions or in pop culture or big corporations and parts of our you know, governments in various places, right? Now, we do live in a culture and a society that does not experience the same degree of persecution as the early church did or as churches in various other parts of the world. But regardless of how free we are to follow Jesus and to worship Jesus, you know, in public places like this, there will be daily choices for us. There will be daily choices for us to demonstrate our allegiance to Jesus. And undoubtedly, there will be opposition to it. That's just something I feel like is important for us to know as we keep down this path. Jesus is letting us know right out of the gate, telling us, hey, don't be surprised. He says it like this in John chapter 15. He's speaking to his followers once again. Here's what he says. If the world hates you, remember that it hated me first. The world would love you as one of its own if you belong to it, but you're no longer a part of the world. Why? Because I chose you to come out of the world. And so it hates you because of it. Verse 20 says, don't you remember what I told you? A slave is not greater than the master. So since they persecuted me, your master, naturally they will persecute you. The Apostle Peter, again, was someone else who was instrumental in just the beginning stages of this whole Jesus movement. Peter gives a similar encouragement. Listen to what he writes. He says, dear friends, don't be surprised at the fiery trials you are going through as if something strange were happening to you. Instead, be very glad. Well, there we have it. Be very glad for the trials that make you partners with Christ in his suffering so that you will have the wonderful joy of seeing his glory when it's revealed to all the world. If you're insulted because you bear the name of Christ, you will be blessed, for the glorious Spirit of God rests upon you. Don't be surprised. Instead, he says, be glad. If you're insulted, you'll be blessed by Christ. And I love the any part. He says, and you'll be united with him in your suffering. You'll be united with him in your suffering. What does that mean exactly? There was a picture that came to my mind this week about what that might actually look like. My fourth grade son, Oli, a few weeks ago, he was playing at recess and he tripped and fell and he gashed his chin on the slide of the playground. And the nurse called me from school and she, you know, she's like, it's a pretty deep cut. You know, she bandaged it up and was like, I don't know if you want to take him in, but you know, it's a pretty good gash. I think we got it. But she's like, you know, my guess is there's going to be a pretty good scar under his chin. She was going like, good thing it was kind of on the bottom part of his chin, so that scar wasn't, you know, anywhere like more visible on his face. And so anyway, he came home from school and I was like worried how he was going to be feeling, you know, a big gash under his chin and the prospect of a scar forming there. And all of a sudden it dawned on me like, hey, I've got a scar underneath my chin. And so at dinner that night, I just kind of like, I was checking in on him to see how he's doing, seeing how he's feeling. And I didn't suspect that it would make the discouragement go away. But I just was like, hey, Oli, man, you know, like I got to thinking, man, you know, I know you got that scar going. It's kind of neat. I've got the same scar under my chin. And at the very same moment, I had forgotten about this, but my older daughter, Lucy, when she was young, she had like dove apparently chin first into one of the zero entry pools, right? And she gashed her chin. And she's like, oh, yeah, Oli, me too. I got the scar under my chin. And it didn't take away like any of the pain. It didn't take away any of the discouragement or, you know, any of the, you know, bummer news about, you know, having just gassed his chin. But for a moment there, it was just kind of like this little moment of connection that we all had. Going like, hey, me too, me too, me too. And we were united together in what otherwise was kind of a bummer set of circumstances. And I just think that the opposition that we face when we bear the name of Christ, I think it can have the same impact on our relationship with Christ. It doesn't take away any of the opposition that we face. It doesn't take away any of the pain or the difficulty, but I think it can unite us in a deeper way with Jesus. I think it can unite us and give us a greater confidence in the one whose name that we do bear and the message that we carry. And so I just want to ask you then here today, give you a few moments to reflect, and we created a moment to help do that a little bit more in the I finish up here, but I just want to ask you today, is there any place in your life, any place in just in your relationship with Jesus, or when you're following Jesus into the world, is there anywhere where you're tempted to like shy away from Jesus or to back away from the message of Jesus because of the opposition that you sense or that you feel, that you worry about in the world around you? I want to encourage you today to stand firm in the face of it. Now, I'm not telling you to like go post some like fiery monologue on Facebook, like, you know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not telling you to like show up to, you know, protest with like signs with Bible verses on them. All I'm trying to do today is to encourage you to be prepared for the moments when you'll come under fire because of your faith in Jesus. I want to encourage you today to be prepared for these moments and to decide now how you're going to respond in these moments, like spiritually speaking, in terms of the relationship that you have with Jesus. I want to encourage you to decide in the moments of calm how you're going to respond in the moments of chaos or tension or opposition, to decide now that you're not going to abandon the cause, that you're not going to back away from the cause, that you're not going to shy away from the cause or the message of Jesus Christ because the world does not applaud you for it. If you know me, you know I love the game of basketball. Love to play it. Love to watch it. Love to read about it. There was a story this month in the world of the NBA that got my attention. The Atlanta Hawks were using some of their home games to celebrate what they deemed, this whole kind of promotional series, what they deemed to be the best of Atlanta. One of the promotional nights that they had planned at their home arena, it was intended to feature an Atlanta establishment called Magic City. Magic City, hopefully you're not familiar with it. Hopefully that's the case. But Magic City is a notable, gentleman's club in Atlanta. And it was going to be the feature one night in the promotional series for the best of Atlanta, Magic City. When he heard about it, San Antonio Spurs player Luke Kornet, he wrote about it. Luke is a Christian dude who, my understanding, has like developed some bit of a blog or a voice as he began highlighting various churches that he visited while he was on the road during an NBA season. That's kind of cool. And my understanding is that he used that platform and that voice that he had been kind of developing to like call into question and to draw some attention to this promotional night for Magic City. citing, you know, I think what he thought was kind of the family-friendly nature of the NBA and going to an NBA game, and citing as well his concern for like the objectification of women, you know, in a thing like this. He called on the NBA and the Atlanta Hawks to like reconsider. As you can imagine, it drew like a really wide variety of responses. Some were glad to see him stand up, you know, for kids and for families showing up to the game. And you know, others were glad to see him stand up for the dignity and the respect of women. Others, on the other hand, were not as supportive. And many were actually quite vocal about it, including a handful of notable NBA stars. Names that you might recognize, including a handful of writers and pundits and team management and even owners who criticized Luke and kind of came at Luke for questioning the art and the creativity and the profession, you know, of women who had, you know, chosen this line of work. Luke Cornett didn't backtrack. He didn't, you know, back down or retract his comments. In fact, his concern for the event happening in a city that wasn't even his own, on a team that wasn't even his concern reached all the way to the top, to Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, who canceled the whole deal, put the kibosh on the promotional night for Magic City in Atlanta. I read a follow-up article on the whole deal that quoted the DJ of Magic City, who was at the game still on the night that, you know, his club was supposed to have been featured. Here's what the DJ said. He said, "I didn't think it was a big deal at first. Then I started to realize I've been amongst club culture for half of my DJ career, and it kind of took me away from the real world." And then pointing to a young fan off in the distance at the game, he said this, like him. What if he sees this and wants to actually ask, what is this about? How do we talk to the kids? I get that side. I really do. Now, I do know that Luke Cornett is a Christian guy, from what I understand about him. But I'll be honest, I don't totally know. I mean, there's no way I can really know the inspiration behind his request and this initiative. I can make some assumptions that it had to do maybe with his faith or his, you know, biblical values or something else. Either way, I think it paints a pretty powerful picture of what it looks like to stand firm in the face of opposition. I think it paints a pretty powerful picture of what it looks like to do the, you know, the God honoring, to do the right thing, even when it's not all that popular. And I can't help but wonder what it would be like if you and I applied the same kind of courage and the same kind of, you know, boldness in our own communities and in our own spheres of influence and places of influence in our everyday life. See, I think that we could do a whole lot more than just change events and change minds. I think that this kind of boldness and this kind of courage, I think it actually could display a strength that changes hearts as people watch us reflect Jesus no matter what. And that's ultimately what I want to encourage of you today. And as I do that, I'm well aware of the fact that that kind of boldness, you know, for your faith, that kind of boldness for Jesus, it very well may put all of us, it may put us in the line of fire. We very well may feel the heat a whole lot more than any of us would prefer. I get that. And so as we close here today, I want us to be reminded, and I asked the band to just help create a moment that would do some of that reminding for us. I want us to be reminded that we are not alone in the midst of any heat or any fire or any opposition that we might face as we follow Jesus. Let me pray. God, I get it. This is not necessarily like a real kind of happy-go-lucky message, but I just feel like it's important for all of us to understand what it really looks like to follow after your son, Jesus, God. And so I'm praying that you would develop in more of us, God, develop in all of us a growing confidence to represent, to bear the name of Christ as best as we can, God. And when we find ourselves in moments where, you know, the opposition is greater, God, when the temperature rises, when we're facing the heat a little bit more than we would like, I pray that you would just give us a confidence to know that you are there with us, God. And what we're experiencing might even have a way of uniting us to you in greater ways. God, give us a courage, give us a boldness, and give us a confidence that you are with us no matter what it is that comes our way. And we pray these things in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m. Midcurrent is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin.